We're going, of course, towards the end of the book of Shmos, and both Vayakel Pekude, which are two parshiyos that are usually read together, except when it's a leap year, so we separate them. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down. The day that he comes down, of course, is Yom Kippur. That is the day of forgiveness, the day in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has forgiven the sin of the Chet HaEgel, and as a result, Moshe Rabbeinu brings down the Luchos Shnios. And the day after Yom Kippur, the Jewish people are gathered together, and Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the details of Hakamas HaMishkan. All of the things that Hashem had told Moshe in Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, Moshe is now communicating to Bnei Yisrael. But before he gives them the details of the Mishkan, he gives them the commandment of Shabbos. For 6 days you shall do work, on the seventh day you shall rest. Kala osa bo malacha, anyone that does malacha on Shabbos, yumas shall die. And then it mentions somewhat peculiarly a one specific malacha. We know, of course, that Chazal understands that the juxtaposition between Shabbos and Mishkan is very significant, because it is the very definition of what is the forbidden activity on Shabbos. The forbidden activity on Shabbos are the 39 activities that were involved in the construction of the Mishkan. Actually, let me be a bit more specific on this. There's actually two different laws that we learn out of the juxtaposition. And they may sound like they're the same, but they are two very different laws. Law number one is, what is the definition of malacha on Shabbos? The definition of malacha are the activities that were involved in construction of the Mishkan. And that includes even indirect activities like plowing. Now you may say, well, how is plowing connected to the construction of the Mishkan? Well, they have to plow to plant herbs which were used for dyes, which dyed the curtains and the wall hangings of the Mishkan. Therefore, plowing is considered to be connected to the Mishkan and the like. So halacha number one is, what is the definition of what is a malacha? So it's not a matter of physical work, it's a matter of what was done in the Mishkan. Halacha number two, and this will sound the same, but it's not the same, is the actual law that you're not allowed to build the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. Now theoretically, one could have said, okay, I look to Mishkan to define malachos, but maybe the actual mitzvah of building a temple is so great that it overrides Shabbos. That is the second hacha, that Binyan Beis HaMikdash or Binyan Mishkan itself is not such a sacred activity that it overrides Shabbos, right? These are two separate halachas that are learned out of the juxtaposition of Shabbos and Mishkan. Now, here's a problem. This is not the first time that Mishkan and Shabbos have been juxtaposed. In Parshas Kisisa, before the Chet HaEgel, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu finishes telling Moshe about all the details of the Mishkan, he then says, "V'shamru v'nei Yisrael es ha-Shabbos," they shall keep Shabbos, to make Shabbos l'dorosam baris olam. So note the following. When Hashem speaks to Moshe, he first gives him the details of the Mishkan, and then he gives him the commandment of Shabbos. First Mishkan, then Shabbos. But when Moshe communicates to Bnei Yisrael, it is first Shabbos and then Mishkan. There is a reversal of the sequencing in the two parshios. If you look at Rashi, Rashi unfortunately does not really help us out here, because Rashi interprets both juxtapositions in the same way, notwithstanding a reversal of the order. In other words, the way he says it in Kisisa is Hashem is saying to Moshe, although I've just given you Mishkan, but
Shabbos is so important that it overrides what I gave you. That's how he explains the first juxtaposition. The second juxtaposition is, I mentioned Shabbos first because it's more important than Mishkan. So either way, Mishkan loses no matter which way the sequencing goes. But the obvious problem in Rashi is, number one, why would the Torah repeat the same idea twice? And number two, if it is communicating the same idea twice, why does it communicate it by reversing the order? Right, these are two problems in Rashi's explanation. I'm not going to give you an answer for Rashi, because Rashi indeed is a very, very difficult Rashi, although it's based on Chazal. But I want to share with you an totally alternative explanation of the Meshech Chachma, which is a truly brilliant explanation. You know, one of the things the Meshech Chachma does throughout his Perish on Chumash, you know, there's a whole genre of fiction that's called, like, alternative reality fiction. By that I mean to say the people who write novels, what would happen, you know, if Hitler, Yamashiro, would have won the war? What would happen if Kennedy hadn't been assassinated, right? You kind of try to reconstruct alternative historical scenarios based on the hypotheticals that didn't happen. Well, the Meshech Chachma has a thesis throughout the Torah that the mitzvos would have taken a somewhat of a different form had there not been a cheto ego. And the cheto ego changed the way certain mitzvos are performed. And as a result, the Torah will sometimes, when the Torah gives you mitzvos before the cheto ego, it will give them in a certain language to suggest that they would have taken a different form. And structurally, what the Meshech Chachma says is the following. Had there not been a cheto ego, the Mishkan could have been built even on Shabbos. As a result, when Hashem is speaking to Moshe in Parshas Kisisa, which is before the Cheto Ego, the first 40 days before Moshe comes down, Mishkan is mentioned before Shabbos, not as Rashi interprets that even though there's Mishkan, Shabbos is more important. The other way around. Mishkan has priority over Shabbos, and the issue of Shabbos is when you're not building the Mishkan. And it's only as a consequence of the Cheto Ego that Mishkan was demoted and Shabbos has priority. So the reversal of the sequence, according to the Meshech Chachma, is not a repetition of the same drasha, but rather it's highlighting the fact that had there not been a Cheto Ego, Mishkan would have trumped Shabbos. As a result of the Cheto Ego, Shabbos trumps Mishkan. And the Torah's Marame is because the Torah wants you to know, again, I'll try to explain the logic of this. The Torah wants you to know what the alternative reality would have been. Now, it's a totally hypothetical reality, because we never had a Mishkan without a Cheto Ego. Because by the time Moshe comes down, and, you know, etc., we have the Cheto Ego. But there is a remez that had a Mishkan been built before the Cheto Ego, it would have been Docha Shabbos. Now, let me point out a thing that you might remember from a few weeks ago. Rashi could not possibly subscribe to this explanation. And that's why Rashi had to learn that both references are the same. Because it is Rashi's shita, had there not been a Cheto Ego, there wouldn't have been a Mishkan at all. So consequently, you don't have a Mishkan minus Ego. And that's why Rashi could not learn like the Meshech Chachma. But the Meshech Chachma fits the Ramban's view that there would have been a Mishkan, and therefore the Meshech Chachma is adding on to that, it even would have been Doche, it would have overridden Shabbos. Yeah. Yeah.
Where he says there were really seven parshi asarim of the Torah, because without Chet HaEgel, they would have gone directly to Eretz Yisrael.
Well, again,
there you have a hypothetical view.
view of what reality would be.
Right, right.
Well,
they're similar in the sense that they're both discussing the Chet HaEgel as a changing the rules of things, but the Ramban does not address this specific thing. Yeah.
I'm just wondering what we're supposed to learn by exploring this whole thing. I'm not getting that connection.
Well, it'll become clear as I go through it, but basically, it's important for us to understand that the process of chet changes a person's relationship to God. And therefore, it's not simply that although there is tshuva, and in many ways the relationship you have is even stronger, but it is different. It is not simply putting things back the way they were, but indeed there is a cosmic change in the framework of the universe. Now, let me just explain what the logic of this is. And that is the following. Let's go back to a halachic anomaly. There is a halachic anomaly here. On one hand, we say you cannot build the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. Right? That's the halacha. Right? The post-Chet HaEgel halacha. And the reason for that is because Judaism has two types of holiness. There is the holiness of makam, the holiness of space, and there is the holiness of time. Obviously, we recognize some places are holier than other places. Eretz Yisrael, holier than Chutz La'aretz, Yerushalayim, holier than Eretz Yisrael, Har HaBayis, all the way to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. By the way, just as a little aside, it's important to understand that the concept of a place being holy does not mean God, as it were, is more here than he is anywhere else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is never bounded by place to begin with. Malei Chol HaAretz Kvodo, Hashem's presence fills the universe, or to be more accurate, the universe is located within Hashem. But when we talk about Kedushas Makom, we are really referring to an enhanced ability to receive. Imagine cell phone reception. Right? The sound waves or the radio waves are always there, but sometimes you're able to receive them, sometimes you're not able to receive them. Kedushas HaMakom means you as a person are more mesugal to perceive the presence of Hashem here than maybe in South Dakota or somewhere else. But Hashem is equally there in all places, but the capacity of receiving might be impaired one way or the other. But be it as it may, Judaism certainly recognizes Kedushas Makom. But Shabbos is what is called Kedushas Zman, the sanctity of time that transcends place. And in the hierarchy of holiness, time is more significant than place. And as a result, Shabbos, which is the Beis HaMikdash in time, overrides the construction of Mikdash, which is the epitome of Kedushas Makom. So that's fine, but here is the halachic anomaly. In the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan, many, many korbanos were brought on Shabbos. The daily tamid was brought twice on Shabbos. They burnt incense. They brought musafim. If you would have walked into the Beis HaMikdash, you would have thought it was a total chilul Shabbos zone. Shechita, they slaughtered animals and they cooked and they made fire and they put out fire. What's going on? Chilul Shabbos. But the short answer is that the communal offerings, just like you do a bris on Shabbos, the mitzvah overrides it. So the communal offerings override Chilul Shabbos because Hashem commands us to do these mitzvahs. But the question becomes, so how do we understand this? So how come I can bring the korbanos on Shabbos, but I can't build the Mishkan on Shabbos? So let's take an analogy. Let's take a bris milah itself. If a child is born on Shabbos and the child is healthy, so of course the eighth day after birth is Shabbos, we do a bris on Shabbos, even though a bris involves malacha, bleeding and everything else. It's an interesting question exactly. What is the malacha that is involved in a bris milah? Some say the malacha is shechting. It's considered, although hopefully that's not how we would describe what it is. Maybe makipatish might be another thing. Tikkun, making a kli. Now, let's say the moel lives far away from the baby, and the moel says, hey, if you can do a bris on Shabbos, so I can drive to the bris on Shabbos, because it's needed for the mitzvah. The answer is very simple, no. because it is only the mitzvah that overrides Shabbos. The preliminary activities for the mitzvah do not override Shabbos because you can do it before Shabbos. Right? So in halachic vocabulary, one is described as a mitzvah and one is described as hechsher mitzvah. Hechsher mitzvah means preliminary activity for the mitzvah. So the Meshech Chachma says, korbanos is the same thing. Since you're not allowed to bring korbanos until you have a mishkan or a mikdash, so the mikdash is simply a preliminary activity that is necessary to bring korbanos. So the same way, it is only the bris that overrides Shabbos and not the moral driving, so too, it is only the korbanos that override Shabbos and not the construction, which is a means to an end. Huh? It is a tzivoy, but the Rambam says, that's correct, but the Rambam says the purpose of the tzivoy is so you will be able to bring korbanos. Although it is a tzivoy, but it's a tzivoy towards a end. Yeah.
Is it possible to look at the reason why after Chag HaEgo, Shabbos comes before mention of Mishkan in the following manner? Before Chag HaEgo, Hashem, Moshe was going up to receive the Luchos and all the laws and everything. Bnei Yisrael were down there and they sort of lost their sense of judgment and they did Chet HaEgel. In other words, before Chet HaEgel, Hashem was relying on the fact, I'm giving you the Luchos, you understand that you can't do an Egel, but their understanding wasn't there. They did do a Chet. So therefore, when Moshe came down with the second set of Luchos, Hashem would say, Kibyachol, I got to tell you exactly, explicitly, what you can do and what you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
It's all premised on Shmira Shabbos, and from the Mishkan, therefore Shabbos is mentioned first, and
yeah.
From the Mishkan, we're going to learn all the laws that you can't do on Shabbos, but you right. Can't say you can't do on Shabbos
uh-huh.
Until you present the Shabbos.
Okay, so you're explaining Rashi that essentially there was no halachic change. I understand.
Just the presentation had to be different because
okay.
They obviously had flawed judgment.
I understand. Yeah, I'm giving you Meshech Chachma's approach, which is a different approach, but what you're saying could be an explanation for Rashi. That's true. Now, the Meshech Chachma says the following. The concept that you need a Mishkan in order to bring Korbanos is in itself only because of a Yerida as a result of the Chet HaEgel. Had there not been a Chet HaEgel, God would have been accessible everywhere. We could have brought Korbanos everywhere. So why would we build a Mishkan had there not been an ego if we could bring Korbanos anywhere? The Mishkan itself would have been a Korban. Not that the Mishkan is a structure that enables a Korban, but the Mishkan itself is an act of homage. As a result, it is no longer a Hechsher. It would have been not a preliminary mitzvah. It would have been an actual activity itself. In other words, essentially, the Chet HaEgel meant that our access to Hashem was curtailed, our access was limited, and as a result, the Mishkan is an enabler of Korbanos. As an enabler, it's like the Moel driving, it would not be Docha Shabbos. However, in the absence of a Chet HaEgel, it would not have been an enabler, because we wouldn't have needed the enabler, it would have been a Korban. The same way you have a Korban of animals, you have a Korban of the structure that you built to Hashem, it would have been a Korban. As a Korban, it would have overridden Shabbos. So be it as it may, it's a brilliant hypothetical reconstruction of the notion that had there not been a Chet HaEgel, there still would have been a Mishkan, but the Mishkan would have served a different function. It would not have served the function to enable bringing Korbanos. It would have been a Korban in and of itself. Yeah.
Effective Teshuvah not only makes everything, it makes it better, it doesn't just make us. It seems
yep.
Like that you never ever healed from you, does that imply Teshuvah being...
Well, as a matter of fact, Rashi himself does bring Midrashim that the Chet HaEgel has never been totally healed. And the emes is, this is a difficult aspect of tshuva. On one hand, we have many mamari chazal that the Baal tshuva is more beloved to Hashem than even the tzaddik that never sinned. That tshuva, because of the passion of coming close to Hashem, the relationship is deeper. But the deeper relationship doesn't mean that the injuries of the past still aren't there. A person is handicapped in various ways. Hashem loves and cherishes the fact that you come to Him notwithstanding the disability, so to speak. And in a sense, He loves you more. But that doesn't totally mask the fact that there's been some change in the relationship. So it's a complicated idea. The complicated idea is that we live with handicaps and burdens. But just as a parent might love a special needs child even more, so Hashem loves the Baal Tshuva even more. But that doesn't masquerade or disguise the fact that there are handicaps that a person has that changes the relationship. The Cheder Egel in particular, Chazal described, that is a blemish, so to speak, that remains in Am Yisrael. The Cheder Eitz Hadas itself, right, creates a certain blemish. But now I do want to focus on another point, really two points I want to focus on. I hope I can get into them. And that is, in the reference to Shabbos, we have the famous pasuk, not in Vayakil, but in Vishomru, in Kisisa's Parsha. Beini uvein b'nei Yisrael, os hi liolam. Between me, Hashem is saying, and b'nei Yisrael, Shabbos is an eternal sign. Os hi liolam. The Nesivas Shalom, the Slonim HaRebbe, and perhaps you, many of you might be familiar with the Sefer. It's a very, it's a series of Svarim, many, many Svarim, called Nesivos Shalom, on Chumash, on Moadim, on Inyanim of Chinuch, Hashkafa, Pirkei Avos. This is kind of an introduction to Hasidus. So many people who are not deeply immersed in Hasidic thought use the Nesivos Shalom as a primer for introduction to Hasidus. I don't want to say Hasidus for dummies, that wouldn't be the right way to say it, but you know, like somewhat like the series, an introduction to Hasidus. He quotes a very amazing mesh. The very first Friday of Bryas HaOlam was a very busy time. Adam and Chava were created, they were put in Gan Eden, they committed the chait of the Eitz Hadas, they were expelled from Gan Eden, it was still not Shabbos yet. But not only that, but according to the Medrash, they gave birth to Cain v'Hevel that Friday. Cain v'Hevel were fully grown. Cain killed Hevel that Friday. So talk about a busy Friday, you know, we complain, you know. Right? And it's not even Shabbos yet. So the Medrash tells us that Adam bumped into Cain. And he said to Cain, knowing that Cain had killed Hevel, have you made peace with Hashem? And Cain responded, Asisi tshuva, I did tshuva, v'nispasharti, I made a peshara, I made a deal, I made a compromise, a very unusual language, plea bargain. I made a deal with Hashem. And the Medrash says that Cain taught Adam HaRishon there was such a thing as tshuva. Adam HaRishon said, there is such a thing as tshuva? Miyad! Of course, the sun is finally setting, bringing in Shabbos. Adam HaRishon said, Mizmor Shir, Tehillim Tzadik Veis, Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, a song of Shabbos, Tov Lahodos Lashem. Now, we translated it's good to be grateful to Hashem, but the Medrash understands Lahodot is to confess your sin and ask for Hashem's forgiveness. It is good to ask Hashem for forgiveness. This is what the Medrash says. So first of all, the Medrash is a remarkable Medrash because the Medrash says that it was Cain. Cain was the first person who did tshuva. And it was Cain who taught Adam HaRishon the koach of tshuva. But there are many, many problems in the Medrash. Problem number one is, what is the unusual lashon that Cain uses? Nispasharti. He could have said, I did tshuva and I was forgiven. What does it mean, I did tshuva and I got myself a compromise? Compromise implies you got something that you wanted, but you didn't get something else. Second of all, what's the shaychus between Shabbos and tshuva? Why does Adam HaRishon incorporate Tov Lahodos Lashem, which is his thanking Hashem for tshuva, in Mizmashir Yom HaShabbos? So the Nesiv HaShalom explains it in a very, very beautiful, powerful way. Let's look at Cain's speech to Hashem, right? Cain is caught red hat in the act. You know, Hashem says, "Where's your brother?" And Cain utters the immortal words of trying to evade responsibility. Hashem Erochi Enochi. I have to watch my brother. I don't have to know where he is. And Hashem says, I gave you a chance to confess on your own, but Kol Dmei Achicha. It is the voice of your brother that is screaming from the ground. So Cain then says, eventually, Gadol Avoni Minaso. My sin is greater than I can bear. Again, it's important to just picture this. He's describing an Avera as a crushing weight. I can't go on. It's more than I can bear to be separated from you. Now then he says, I will be a Navanad Biaretz. I will be a wanderer. And all who will find me will kill me. So the Nesiv HaShalom explains it this way. This is a little bit of a drush. Cain is not simply saying, I'm afraid people are going to kill me. Rather, he means the following. When I don't have a life that's connected to God, I don't have a sense of meaning. I don't have a sense of purpose. I just wander from place to place, from experience to experience, trying to fill the void, the emptiness, the sadness, the despair, whether it's through alcohol or drugs or sex or workaholism, whatever it is. He's saying to Hashem, I don't want to be a person who just goes from thing to thing to thing, never being connected. And then he says, and all who find me will kill me. Allegorically, this means, and every experience will just kill me again and again and again. It's a thousand deaths. Cain is not just asking for a security guard. Cain is saying to Hashem, to live without being connected to you, every experience will drive another nail into my soul. So the Pasuk says, Hashem gave Cain an oath. Now Rashi says, this is the famous mark of Cain. Rashi says he actually gave Cain a dog to protect him. This is the first reference to man's best friend. In fact, that's the so that's our saying in Washington, D.C., where I come from, that if you want to get a friend, you want to have a friend in Washington, just get a dog. That's about it, as it were. But the Nesiv HaShalom learns differently. Os, Hashem gave Cain the gift of Shabbos, which is described later in the Torah as an os. Meaning. And that's what Cain means when he said, I got a pshara with God. Because what he's saying is, Hashem, my whole life I will be separated from you. Hashem's answer? For 6 days that may be true. But I will give you a day where you can connect. So, we see two things now. Not only was Cain the first person who did tshuva, but it was Cain who was given the gift of Shabbos as a result of his tshuva. That no matter how far you are separated from Hashem, Shabbos opens up the gate where you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why he tells Adam HaRishon, I did tshuva and I made a compromise. What's the compromise? Yeah, the whole week I'm a Nav and not Biaretz. But I have Shabbos. And Adam HaRishon then says, I didn't know there was such a thing as tshuva. And therefore he thanks Hashem for tshuva in the Song of Shabbos. Because Shabbos, now again, of course Shabbos commemorates Briyas HaOlam, but it was given to Bnei Adam to celebrate as a sign of Hashem's forgiveness of the tshuva of Cain. So Shabbos is connected to tshuva precisely for that reason. So when it says Hashem gave Cain an os, Hashem gave Cain the Shabbos as an os, and that is That addresses the Na V'Nad. You understand the poignancy of Na V'Nad. You know, without a connection to Hashem, this is our curse, our bracha and our curse. Our neshamos come from Hashem. Our neshamos are a chelek of Hashem, whatever that means exactly. It's hard to know. When we're not connected to that source, there is suffering, there's aimlessness, there's despair, and a person tries to overcome that in all sorts of ways. And maybe for a long time a person can get away with it. But then at some point in a person's life, you know, you psychologists will call it midlife crisis or whatever it is. But it's more than that. There's a deep spiritual longing in a person, which if they don't satisfy it, they will try to engage in every type of distraction, the Na V'Nad B'Yatz. But it's Shabbos that feeds the neshama. And that is the idea of the Yos, and that is what we mean when we say Shabbos is Neshama Yisera. Now, Neshama Yisera, people translate as an extra soul, but probably the better translation is not an extra soul, but it means an enhanced soul. Your soul is enlarged in its capacity to absorb Ruchnius and Kedusha. And Rashi says in Maseches Be'ah that the Maila, the advantage of the Neshama Yisera, is that you can eat more on Shabbos because you're eating for two, you're eating for a larger soul. But that seems to be a bit of a triviality, and also it's unfair because you eat more, but the Neshama leaves and the calories stay. You know, let it take the calories with it. But the simple explanation is that when Rashi talks about the ability to eat and drink on Shabbos, he is referring not to cholent and kugel, but he is referring to the food of the soul. The food of the soul. And I don't mean collard greens, watermelon, but soul food. The capacity of the soul to be nene, miziv hashchina. And that was the great gift that was given to Kayin as a result of the agony of his tshuva. And that's a gift that we have. And by knowing that there's one point in my life where I can connect to Hashem, that gives me the courage and the strength not to be destroyed or despondent the rest of the week. And that is why Havdalah has the verse from Yeshayahu, Hine Kel Yeshuasi, the God of my salvation, Eftach, I have trust in Him, V'lo Efchad, I am not afraid. Why do we mention in particular, I'm not afraid? What would we be afraid of? Because you see, when you leave Shabbos, you're back into that world of turbulence, that world of confusion. Again, maybe Yerushalayim less so, maybe Yerushalayim more so. It depends on how you understand it. But there is the world of turbulence, the world of richuk, the world of distance, the world of ambiguity. I'm afraid I'm going to lose that relationship with Hashem, and like Kayin, I'm going to be a nav and nad biaretz. V'haya kol motza yargeni, and every experience that I encounter may kill me again and again. But by taking in that holiness of Shabbos, v'lo efchad, I'm not afraid because I know that Hashem is with me. Shabbos tells me every week that Hashem is with me. That is the Yosef Kayin. This is how the Nesiva Shalom understands why Kayin uses the idea of Peshara. Until Mashiach comes, we're not going to have the Yom Shekulo Shabbos. We're not going to have, every day being Shabbos. That'll come later. But at least we have the Me'ein Olam Haba, that one day a week. So again, it's something that all of us should think about very much. We take Shabbos for granted sometimes. Because it comes every week. But in a sense, the very fact that it comes so often is because it is so necessary. Otherwise, a person is menutak from the Shekhinah. And when we're menutak from the Shekhinah, there is only sadness. And again, it's no accident obviously it's a complicated question, but it's well known statistically that suicide rates, particularly for teenagers, are generally much higher in developed countries than undeveloped countries. Now, part of that is When you have to spend the whole day looking for bread, you don't have time to ponder the existential crises of life. But once basic economic security is there, once you have what to eat, you immediately begin to think about, why am I eating? Why am I alive? And if a person doesn't have an answer for that, then God forbid it can turn into the worst possible scenarios, including violence to oneself, and like all those high school shootings in America, violence to other people as well. So this notion of the search for meaning is not just a superficial thing that dilettantes like to do. It is a genuine, genuine crisis that really every human being has, and certainly a Jew who is more attuned to that. Now there's one more thought I wanted to share with you, which is not connected, but also it's a thought that's very worthwhile. So now we're beginning, right? We were given the commandments of the Mishkan. The Yakil Pekudei is the actual construction of the Mishkan. Now, when it comes to construction of the Mishkan, generally speaking, everybody gave as much or as little as they wanted to. Gold, silver, copper, techeles, argaman, whatever you want to give. Nobody stood over you to make sure that you have to give a minimum amount. There is only one part of the Mishkan where everybody had to give the same amount. And that was a half shekel. Now don't confuse this, because half shekel, there are two different half shekels that are relevant here. There was an annual half shekel offering that did not go to the building of the Mishkan. That went to the purchase of the animals that were brought as korbanos. And that was not only in the Mishkan, that was in the Beis HaMikdash as well. In fact, we have historical records of armed caravans bringing millions of shtalim from Babylonia to Eretz Yisrael. Imagine how, you know, dangerous that was. But that's not what I'm talking about. In fact, I'll talk about that next week. I'm not talking about the half shekel of the korbanos. There was a one-time half shekel only of silver, which was melted down, and it made the adonim. The adonim are sockets, right? The Mishkan had beams. We translate them as boards, krushim, but really they were beams. They were much thicker than boards. And the beams were carved with two teeth, like the prongs of a plug. And the teeth were set into a base called an adan. And the adan was actually several hundred pounds. It was quite heavy. And every keresh had two adanim. Imagine you put the prongs into these two silver adanim. Those adanim were constructed from half shekel mandatory offerings that every person from 20 and up had to give. And the Torah says specifically that it has to be the same. The rich guy cannot give more. The poor person cannot give less. And the question comes, all right, korbanos, we understand, everybody has to be equal, but when it comes to building the Mishkan, everybody gave different amounts anyway. So why would the Torah be insistent that this part of the Mishkan be constructed with uniformity when the Torah didn't care about any other part of the Mishkan being constructed with uniformity? What's so special about the Adonim to make it different from the rest of the Mishkan? So let's take the first part of the question first. That is, why does the Torah say every person gives whatever they want to give, and the Torah does not impose a minimum or even a maximum? Rabbeinu Bechaya writes, and this you have to trust him because I didn't count it either. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes that there are actually 613 commandments about the Mishkan. If you count every single commandment, do this, do that, do that, do that, it's 613, and that's equal to the number of mitzvahs in the Torah. Because building a Mishkan is actually symbolic of building a Mishkan in our heart and our soul. That's a repository for the Shechina. Every detail of the Mishkan corresponds to making our own heart a Mishkan for Hashem. Bilvavi, Mishkan, Evna, in my heart I build a dwelling place for the divine. So the same way that the Mishkan was built with 613 commandments, we build the Mishkan of God in our hearts by keeping the 613 commandments. We are the Mishkan, ultimately. So, when it comes to constructing a Mishkan,
It's not possible for Hashem to say everybody builds the Mishkan with the same materials. Hashem does not want us to be robots, automatons. He doesn't want everybody to be the same. He precisely wants each person to construct within the framework of halacha, of course, to construct their own Mishkan with their own talents, their own ability, their own uniqueness. We make a big mistake when we think that the goal of community and achdus is that everybody be the same. Whether you talk about the beauty of a garden lies in the different colored flowers, or a tapestry, or a symphony, if you want to use an auditory metaphor, or a mosaic, it is precisely the combination of different colors and textures and talents. The beauty of a community lies not in its sameness. The beauty of a community lies in its diversity. Again, diversity within the framework of being the Mishkan of Hashem. So consequently, the Balei Seder write, when it comes to how we build a Mishkan, it's not possible for the Torah to say, Reuven and Shimon and Sarah and Esther, they all do the same thing. They're not supposed to do the same thing. That's why tribes are such a big deal. You know, you might raise the question, you know, there's Am Yisrael. Why does the Torah make such a big deal about a Reuven and a Shimon and a Levi, separate flags, separate Nesiim? What's going on here? Achdus. I mean, it's interesting. You might think today we don't have a tribal sense, so we ought to be more united. In fact, we're less united. Okay. But, you know, today, you know, I don't go over to you and say, well, I can't, you know, talk to you because you're from Shevet Yisachar and I'm from Shevet Zebulun. That's a foreign way of thinking, except for Kohanim. And yet the Torah obviously had a big deal with Shvatim, because the concept, once again, is Hashem says within Am Yisrael, there were different approaches, different derachim, different ways of doing things. And it was precisely the conglomeration of all of these different approaches that creates the Mishkan. So everybody gives a different Mishkan. But even though everybody gives a different Mishkan, it must rest on a common foundation. The Adonim are the foundation. I'll discuss what that means exactly. And therefore, yes, everybody gives different. But the foundation must be the same foundation. What is that foundation? So the Adonim represent the common foundation in the differential Mishkan that each of us builds with our lives. So here, let me share with you a Gemara in Makos. The Gemara at the end of Makos says that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Am Yisrael 613 mitzvahs. Two of them we heard from Hashem directly, the first two of the Ten Commandments. Moshe gave us 611. Torah Tzivolanu Moshe, Torah's Begamatria 611, because two of the Aseret Dibros we heard from Hashem. Good. But later generations got spiritually weaker. And as the later generations got spiritually weaker, the different Chachamim wanted to reduce the mitzvahs. Now by reducing them, I don't mean, you know, take them away, but to give us fewer principles. So by having a few principles in our mind, we could reconstruct the whole Torah. And the Gemara goes through a list of 15, 11. I'm going to go towards the end of the list. Towards the end of the list, we have Micha the Navi. Micha the Navi reduced the whole Torah to three principles. This is actually a very famous pasuk, I believe. For some reason, it's on the National Archives in Washington, D.C., and that is, Ma Hashem el, in English, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mimach, what does Hashem ask of you? Only three things. Aseis Mishpat, to do justice. Avas Chesed, to love kindness. Vahatsneya Leches Im Hashem Elokecha, and to walk with Hashem in humbleness and humility. By the way, this is very clear that tznius has nothing to do in this pasuk with length of dress or whatever it is. It is the attitude of humility, of being private, of not being ostentatious. It applies to men and women in how you serve Hashem. It's kind of a perversion of tznius that we limit it to such a... In fact, it's really by limiting it to externals, we are in fact taking the concept of tznius
and externalizing an idea that by its very inherent nature is an internal idea, more than an external idea. So Micha's big three is do justice, mishpat, love chesed, and walk with Hashem with modesty, humility, humbleness. Yishayahu, the Darish were getting worse. That's too much. Three is too much. He got it down to two. His two are Shimru Mishpat V'yas Tzedakah. Guard justice and do charity. Now, just to compare, although this is a bit of a digression, I just want to compare the two of Yeshayahu versus the three of Micha and look at the difference. Micha's first principle was to do justice, asos mishpat. Yeshayahu changed it to shimru mishpat, keeping mishpat, guarding. So one might suggest the following distinction. To do justice means you go out and you do justice. But when the generations got worse and inferior, they were not capable of doing things justly. So Yeshayahu turned it into a negative. Guarding is a negative, meaning to say, if you can't do justice, at least avoid injustice. Be sure you don't, guard justice, meaning don't do things that are unjust. So he changes it from the positive to the negative. Similarly, Micha's second principle is to love kindness. Yeshayahu changed it to give charity. What's the distinction there? Ideally, a Jew should love to be native. We should love it. It should be something that we yearn to do. But what if you're a person who just doesn't have those feelings? What if generation lost that generosity? So Yeshayahu says, write the check anyway. In other words, if you can't love chesed, at least do tzedakah. In other words, don't use the absence of feeling as an excuse. But what is most peculiar is, Yeshayahu drops out the third one. To walk b'hatznei alechas, Yeshayahu takes it out. Why is that so? See, here too, there's an important lesson. That is, ideally, Tznius in Avodas Hashem is a very, very important mila. A person's mitzvos should be done privately. Other people don't have to see. But when you live in a generation where more and more Jews are not keeping the mitzvos, sometimes you need to set aside your tznius so that people can learn from you. They can be inspired from you. Meaning, you don't have the luxury to be totally private in your avodah session. Yes, that is the highest level. I knew of a great Rosh Yeshiva who was so humble. He really was so humble. He never allowed anybody to see him learn. Meaning, he used to get up 2 o'clock in the morning with a Gemara, and he had a newspaper under the Gemara. Whenever someone else got, he would take the newspaper, cover up the Gemara, and say, "I couldn't sleep, so I'm reading the paper." Now, eventually some people caught on, etc. That's why he became Rosh Hashiva. But he had a thing about, he didn't want anybody to know what he does. Well, one can understand that. But on the other hand, sometimes you have an achrayis. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, as a young man, very much wanted to be a parish. He wanted to be somebody who went into the forest. He went into the forest to serve Hashem privately. There were, in Lita, in Lithuania, there were actually groups of great tzaddikim, who we would call hermits, frankly. They actually went into the forest. Nobody knew about them. They would only come to their families, once every Shabbos, or even less than that, etc. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was very attracted to that derech of avoda, the hatznei aleches. But then he asked himself, what right do I have to focus only on my avoda Hashem in a generation when so many need guidance and hadracha? So he set aside his midah of tznius, and that's what Yeshayahu is merame. Tznius is the most wonderful thing, but sometimes you got to be a little public. At a minimum, your children have to see you do mitzvahs. I knew a fellow, it's a similar story. He never learned in front of his children. He only learned when the children were asleep. He didn't want to be a Baal Gaiva. Okay, that's wonderful. But the children don't have a role model. Okay, So we've gone from Micha's 3 to Yeshayahu's 2. Okay. But even 2 is not enough. What they used to say about, or too much, they used to say about a certain politician, he could not chew gum or walk at the same, and walk at the same time. So we need 1. So the Navi Habakkuk reduced it to 1. 1 principle that underlies the entire Torah, from which you could reconstruct everything. Tzadik b'emunaso yichya. A tzadik lives with his emuna. Emuna. I believe in a God that loves me. I believe in a God that cares about me. I believe in a God that made heaven and earth, who gives me life. And with emuna, everything else falls into place. The vicissitudes and tragedies of life don't crush you, because you know there is a meaning and a purpose. When you have emuna, you want to learn Torah, you want to do mitzvahs, because you want to know, how can I serve Hashem? It doesn't become a burden, it becomes something you want to do. So the Balei Musar say, if everybody constructs a Mishkan in their own way, the common foundation of our Mishkan are the Adonim, and the Adonim represents Emuna. Tzadik b'emunaso yichya. And that is uniform, because everybody needs that foundation. You build your Mishkan however you do it, with your talent and your abilities. But it must rest on the foundation of Emuna. So I would just add this little point. If indeed the Adonim are a remez to Emuna, why does each Keresh have 2 Adonim? And that suggests the following idea, that Emuna is a double-edged concept. Rav Tzadok says in the Tzidkas HaTzadik, Kishem shechayev adam lahamin ba'kadosh baruch hu. Just as a person must have emuna in Hashem, kach chayev adam lahamin bi'atzmo. A person must have emuna in themselves. Emuna means that we believe in our kochos, our ability, that Hashem does not make junk, as the t-shirt says. And t-shirt sayings are always true. That's almost always true, because that's why they become cliches in that way. That emuna means I, all of us, have kochos, have abilities, have what to contribute. Because otherwise a person could say, who am I that my mitzvahs matter? Who am I that Hashem cares if I do this or that? Right? Who am I? It's not nothing. Now that may sound like anava, that may sound like modesty, humility, but that is the greatest yetzer hara, when a person does not realize their kochos. This is the primary responsibility of a parent, and the spouse, by the way, in both directions, to give the other a sense that they matter, that they have kochos, that can do great and wonderful things. But you have to believe that about yourself as well. Because as the salesman's saying goes, you can't sell a product that you don't buy. You can only sell what you buy. And therefore the 2 prongs of the Adonim represent these 2 messages of Emuna. Rav Yerucham of Meir used to say that the person who does not recognize his failings is a foolish person. Indeed. But a person who does not recognize his greatness is a tragic person. There's a tragedy in not knowing what we could have become. At the Levaya of the Chazon Ish, in 1953, there was a bocher from a yeshiva that was crying and sobbing, and Rav Dessler, the great Michtam Eliyahu, Rav Dessler, who was the Mashgiach of Panovich, went over to the bocher, and he said to the bocher, why are you crying over the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik, who's buried over there in the ground? He pointed to the boy. Why don't you cry over the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik that's buried within you? There is a Rav, Gaon, and a Tzaddik that is buried within you. Now the Hasidic Sfarim say that this is actually the meaning in Moda Ani, where we end it with the words, which really a phrase in Eicha, Megillas Eicha, Rabbi Munasecha, your faith is great. Now, They ask the Kasha, what do you mean your faith is great? We should say, my faith in you is great. Rabba emunasi. Now, grammatically, actually, it's not much of a question, because emuna in the Torah does not refer to belief or faith. Emuna means faithfulness. Indeed, Hashem is called in Parshas Hazinu Kel Emuna. That does not mean a God of faith. Kel Emuna means a God that is faithful in carrying out His word. It refers to dependability, reliability, faithfulness. So when we say Rabba Emunasecha, we are expressing our gratitude to God for being faithful in carrying out His mission to give us life. That's Lefi Pshuta. But if you take emuna in the way we use it today, faith, how can I say God's faith is great? I should say my faith is great. Rabba Emunasi. So the Sifrei Chassidus explain that yes, God's faith is great. Hashem's faith in me is great, that even when we lose faith in ourselves, Hashem has faith. Look at it this way. Every single morning, if you open your eyes and you check the obituaries to see that you're still here, and you discover to your great delight, yes indeed, I'm still here, the Borei Olam is essentially saying, I believe in you. I trust you. You have what you can accomplish in this world. Go ahead and do it. Hashem is telling you that every morning, because otherwise He wouldn't give us life. So how can a person get depressed? You know, easier said than done. How can a person feel despondent? How can a person feel, oh, there are people that, you know, don't appreciate me? So what? The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I believe in you. Right, so that's what the Adonim is. The Adonim are the double-pronged emuna, sad bi emuna so yichya, and the emuna you must have in yourself, which also comes from emuna in Hashem. Emuna Hashem, I know that Hashem's word is emes. So, everybody builds their mishkan in their own way, but everyone needs the foundation of emuna. So, Be'ezras Hashem, the month of Adar, we're entering the real Adar, Adar Sheni, coming up, and the Svarim say, Rav Tzadok says, Adar is Aleph Dar, Aleph is Hashem, we make a dira, we make a residence for our Kaddish Baruch in our heart and our soul. We should be zochet to do that.